Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Roll Around the Barrel, the Vintage Baseball Podcast, talking to players from coast to coast, border to border. I'm interviewing everybody. I think I'm doing it this weekend. On the phone right now. It's a big catch. There's a lot of fish in the pond, and then there's big catches. On the phone, the captain of the Saginaw, Michigan Old Golds. It's Adam Squints McCulley. Adam, how you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Great. You are a big fish.
I'm not that big.
Well,
I'm getting older and sillier. And yeah. I appreciate that.
I would say the most decorated club in Michigan of recreated vintage teams. I don't think that's going way outside of thinking to say that, would you?
No, I mean, we've had some real good games. Yeah, in terms of the World
All right. Well, that's why people like you, Adam, is you're humble. So,
right.
We've had a few good games. All right. So the way we do this, Adam, is we're going to talk about your entire life in baseball. We're going to start from your earliest memories, and this can we can talk about, obviously, all the organized baseball you played all the way up into this very day. And then we can also talk about your life as a baseball fan, which I assume is a Tiger fan. Is that correct?
It is. It's tough right now, but yeah, I was definitely a Tiger fan.
And we had some good times. So let's start off with your earliest memories of baseball.
I feel like anybody else kind of playing our game, I started with Little League T-ball and kind of working our way up. I loved baseball early on, and I don't really remember my parents or anybody really playing or pushing me. They just, hey, you're a kid in the township. You play baseball. So I started playing baseball, and up through high school, I only played like up through my JV year, and I decided to get more distracted with social aspects of stuff in high school, so I didn't play my senior year. And then when I was 18, there was the Canamera games here around Saginaw, and that's where I really kind of fell back in love with baseball again. We played, it was a men's league, Canamera 18 and over, and I got told, a bunch of our friends were still playing, and hey, you want to play in the Canamera games? I was like, yeah, sure, that'll be fun. And I had a blast, and I played well, and I fell in love with baseball all over again there. And you know, you'd drive over to Canada and play some games, and then the following year they'd come here and you'd play some more. It was just a blast. So that was my baseball playing. I mean, I feel like I was always a pretty good player, but I was like the top level guys, the middle guys, and I was like one of the upper middle guys. You know, I wasn't a stud by any stretch of the imagination. I just liked to play, and I feel like I played. You weren't going to make them. I wasn't going to make too many mistakes on the field. I wasn't going to hurt any team. So that's kind of the ball player I was. It's just go out there, have fun, and play okay. I went off and after college, I started teaching in Boston, Massachusetts, actually. And there, Red Sox were killing it. I was at 2004 when they won the World Series. I was actually teaching in Boston when it happened. So watching the Tigers were so terrible for so long. And then to move to Boston and watch like the whole community be the Boston Red Sox like super fans. I was like, this is awesome. This is what baseball should be like in Michigan. And it's just not.
Well,
but when I was out there teaching, there was some weird men's league. And I was like, I'll try out and play for this weird men's league. And I just more and more, I was just like watching baseball more, playing baseball more, thinking about baseball more. And then vintage baseball just kind of fell into my lap.
So let's talk about that. How did vintage baseball, because from what I understand, and I don't know a lot about it, but after Jamie Johnson started up the Bay City Independents, they kind of came, I don't remember who they came to, and you're going to tell me right now, but came to Saginaw and said, hey, you guys need to try this. And then the Saginaw Club, they basically, that's why they have this rivalry today, is because they basically started playing each other all the time in the beginning.
Yeah, totally did. So what happened was, I think that, so Tom Mudd is like a very local historian in Saginaw. him and Harold Combo, and then of course Richard Curry, put together this thing with the Saginaw Community Foundation of Vintage Baseball, and Jamie Johnson helped them get everything started and kind of taught us the rules and taught us all the stuff. And so our early stages, it was like, okay, we want to be just like this Bay City team, because it was phenomenal watching Bay City play. On the very first game, they just beat the crap out of us. It was so like it was so strange, because they were like, it's going to be a lot of fun. We went out there and just got murdered. And you're like, yeah, that's a lot of fun. But I coached Little League, and one of the dads of the sons that we played, he's like, hey, Adam, come on out. There's this thing called Vintage Baseball. I'm going to be on the team, and you want to come out and play? And I was like, okay. He's like, you don't need a glove. It'll be a lot of fun. Like, get out there, and there's like 30 people at this practice, and they're like, hey, this is a good practice. We're playing our first game tomorrow against Bay City Independent. Wear a pair of jeans. I was like, okay. So I showed up there. I don't know anybody besides this guy that let me play, and I'm wearing jeans, and they're like, okay, everyone, you know, nobody knows anybody, and they're like, just go play where you want, and you know just some stories who Richard Curry is, and he's kind of running the team, and you look at me, and I'm a scrawny little nerd with big black glasses, and I just sit on the bench just kind of waiting to get my turn in there, and the first baseman drops a couple balls, and hey, you with the glasses, go play first base. I was like, okay, I'll play first, and they threw three balls to me, and I caught three balls, and I'm like, oh my God, you're on the team. So that's kind of how I started.
Please tell me we're going to get a lot of Richard Curry impersonations.
I could probably do a ton of them. It's my favorite voice in the world.
So it's funny that you say that when you started out and Bay City kicked your guys' butts in that first match. Bay City, the core guys from Bay City always talk about how whenever they played the Rochester Grangers, they would just get destroyed. It would be years before they could even sniff a competitive match with them. And so it does creep into your mind of this is fun, I guess.
I know. It is, and you're watching it, and you're like, this isn't a hard game, is it? And you're like, why are they so much better than everybody else? Like, everyone out here has been a baseball player. Why are they just murdering us this bad? And I used to play softball. Like, I played softball when I came back here. And I hated it so much. And this coming out here, you're like, this is fun. And you have to run and sprint, and the catching the ball with your bare hand is really cool. Like, it just, I fell in love with it right then. I was like, this is awesome. This is so much fun. And, you know, ever since then, I've been playing it now for almost 12 years, 13 years, I think. And, like, it's my favorite thing to do in summer.
The first time you hear you don't need a glove, when we tell people that now, they're like, what do you mean? Yeah, you just use your hands? That's ridiculous. It sounds like you were like, I don't care.
Well, so the guy that, so his name was Chris Sarmiento, and he goes, Adam, you don't need your glove. And sure as shit, I showed up there with my baseball glove, and I brought it out to the bench, and they're like, I wasn't kidding. You don't need a glove. And I was like, I thought you were joking. And he's like, no, we're playing vintage. You throw the ball around and you catch it with your bare hands. And I was like, oh okay.
So you say you've been playing what? This is probably your then 13th year. I think.
Yeah, I think we're going into 13.
Have you played with many other clubs when they've needed people?
Yeah. I mean, I've played with Bay City a couple times. I've played with Walker. I played with the Lottidas. I know I play with other teams. I kind of forget sometimes. I played with the Ponfelders. I think that's the Ponfelders or Fielders out in like Massachusetts. I played for them one time. I was terrible for a bat. I was so bad. It's like one of my favorite stories that I was so bad playing for their team.
Well, let's hit that. How do you get mixed up with a Massachusetts vintage baseball team?
Well, we were playing out in Massachusetts. So we were playing in Boston, and we had like our John Clarkson class. We did it the year before in Cooperstown, and we did it like the next year in Boston, and we invited some teams to play us out there. And one of the teams was short. So I showed up and I was like, hey, I'll play for you guys. You guys are short. They're like, yeah, we're short. And again, I'm the nerdy big glasses guy. And they're like, all right, you go play right field. I never played in the outfield, you know? And I was like, okay, no problem. I'll go out there. And I ran out there and I booted a ball, hit to me, and I was like, oh, great. Now these guys think I'm an idiot. So the next inning, I'm off the bat, I'm in the nine hole. And first pitch, I swing and foul tip it out. And I was like, you got to get me. So the team picks me up. I boot a ball in right field. My first at bat, I foul tip out. Okay. So nothing else was hitting me the rest of the game. The very next at bat, I foul tip out again. And I was like, I was just so embarrassed. Then I was like, guys, I told you I would play for you. I didn't mean to, like, totally, you know, play this horrible for you. So that was, like, the big running joke that, you know, I'm absolutely terrible. Well, the very next game we were playing, the Golds were playing that team. So I think, and I don't remember, I was either the first batter or the second batter. And I know the team was like, wait a minute. This guy just played for us, and he was the worst player on our team, and we batted ninth. And now he's batting, like, number one or number two. And, like, the second pitch, I think I burned the left fielder for, like, either a triple or a double. And everyone's like, whoa. And then I played shortstop and, like, vacuum cleaned up, like, three or four balls hit me right away. And they're like, what the hell? You know, are you sabotaging our team? So every once in a while, a guy, I think his name is Dave, and I forget his last name off the top of my head, he'll send me this little message every once in a while on Facebook saying, hey, I just found this score sheet where you foul tipped out twice for our team. And every now and again, he just throws this little jab in there. And he usually does it, like, after the World Tournament when he sees, like, if we do well, he's like, hey, Adam, by the way, I found it. You were terrible, remember?
Oh, well, it just came into my mind. Foul tip. So over my career, I have foul tipped out, just as, you know, everybody foul tips out to the catcher.
Yeah.
But I apparently have a special place in my heart for you, because it's become part of my repertoire is to foul out to you. I would say I have fouled out to you a cool dozen times, and I've probably not fouled out to any other catcher, like, more than once. But one of my worst memories involves you. I don't remember the year. I have a terrible memory for this kind of stuff. We were playing in the Worlds, and we were playing, it wasn't the championship game. I want to say it was to decide who goes to the championship game, but I could be wrong. You might remember this.
Okay.
Ninth inning, J-Max on second base. I come up, there's two outs. And so I'm mush, okay? I'm like the worst player on the team, just about. And everyone, you know, they put their heads down because they know, what are the odds here?
Right.
So I come up, and I hit a BB down the right field line, and it hit far. And I'm like, I just tied the game. And the ball hit perfectly just to the right of the foul pole out there and stuck right in the ground. So there couldn't even be a question of whether it was fair or foul. It just went,
yeah,
Ploom, foul. And I'm like, oh my God, now I'm going to foul out to Adam. And the next pitch, I fouled out to you. And I'm like, I can't believe I always foul out to this guy. I think do you remember playing us in, like, a semifinal to get to the championship game?
Yeah, we played a couple of, I don't necessarily remember that particular moment, but I do remember. I mean, we played Bay City, and I feel like the semifinals or finals in the World Tournament a lot. Yeah, I remember a lot of those games.
Yeah, God, that sticks with me, because I'm like, I'm gonna get up one of these times and fix that memory. And no, the last game I played against you, I foul tipped you. In fact, the last at bat I've had as you as the catcher, I foul tipped out to you, and while the ball was in the air. So there you go, Adam. Just take it. Just start walking back to the. Oh, geez.
Well, to be fair, we do play each other often. So between your team and Frankenmuth and Bay City, we did see each other more frequently than maybe some of the other teams out there.
Well, that's true. We see each other all the time. I just can't seem to pull a good memory out of there. That's all right. Hey, talk to me about some of your favorite fields to play on.
Favorite fields. You know, the Gettysburg stuff is always an awesome field. And part of it is just because the seeing everybody out there in the just the wide open spaces. That's always really neat. I'm trying to think of another fun field to play. Rochester has a pretty cool. We haven't been out there in a while. We played in when we were in Boston. We played at George Island in the fort, and I think it was called like Fort Warren. And that was really, really cool. You know, they got us on a ferry, and we went across, and we played inside the fort. So everywhere you're looking around, I mean, you're surrounded by history. So that was really, that was a cool place to play. And then we played on in Cooperstown, and that was, you know, that's been pretty cool. There was a, we played right outside the museum in New York, and overlooking the water and the mountains. That was really a neat experience for us to play out there. I don't know. Every little field's kind of unique. They all have their own little weird things. I mean, playing at Greenfield Village is awesome. Like just being around all of that history and watching, like seeing fans. You know, I know some people think how glamorous vintage baseball can be, and the fans are just amazing. But realistically, you're only playing in front of your girlfriends or wives most of the time. But at Greenfield Village, there's so many people there, so that just is a really cool field to play on and be a part of.
Well, it definitely kicks it up a notch. I've never been out to the Gettysburg Festival, but do they get people coming to watch the games?
Yeah, pretty good crowd. I mean, it's the same. You know, it's mostly vintage baseball enthusiasts that come out there and play, but that's like the biggest fan. So it's more about quality than quantity, you know, when it comes to that. But they do have a pretty good turnaround on stuff like that. I mean, those fields are so much fun, and the baseball is so, it's so competitive. That the restrictions that we have here in the Midwest are that are slowly starting to dwindle away. You know, they didn't have them at all in Gettysburg. So when you go out there, you feel like a little kid. You're like, all right, it's just full on baseball. Let's go. And it's a blast out there, and it just adds to the field, it adds to the experience. Just, you know, being out in Gettysburg and sucking up that history and watching a bunch of baseball nerds go out there and play and like have a blast and act like 15-year-old kids. It's a blast.
You know, you started out as a teacher. You no longer do that, but vintage baseball has a very large percentage of teachers that play this, and it's teachers want to learn and they want to teach, but they really want to take things in too. So these historic places are obviously going to be your favorite, like Gettysburg and even the Henry Ford and stuff like that. And there's a Gettysburg story you told me once. I'm going to see if I can jar your memory to get it, but it was the place that you stayed at, you thought there was a ghost.
And 100% there was a ghost.
Okay, so tell us that story.
100%. So we went out there, and it was me, and actually Mike Ozzie and Matt Ballant was with us at Dose. And I'm trying to think, there was a couple more gold. We rented a farmhouse. When we get there, we find out that this was an army hospital at one time. And the basement had, you know, the cut off arms and weird stuff. And they had this little story about everything. Like in the bathroom, there was a door that you opened up and you could look into the cellar. And that's where like dead bodies were and body parts and all kinds of weird stuff. So an amazing Civil War like history in this house. And it was just a cool experience. So we're in there. We've heard these haunted house stories all the time. And my wife swears up and down that we were in bed and she felt something sit on the bed and then get up and she felt it like walk away. And she told me she was freaking out. So she was hidden under the sheets, almost crying because it was so scary to her. And we're like, whatever. It was just Ozzy being a creeper or something like that. True enough, a year later on like the Discovery Channel, they show this house and we're like, wait, we stayed in that house. And they do this whole story about how there's this ghost that has been living in this house and they have ghost hunters in there and everything. And the whole MO of this ghost is it will come sit on people or next to people. So like I'm getting chills just thinking about it. And we were all just teasing Sherry so bad about there's no ghost in here, whatever. And this whole documentary, there was like a half-hour segment on just this house that we had stayed in the year before about a house, a ghost that sits on people. And so Jerry got sat on by the creeper ghost.
So did you go back?
We went back to Gettysburg, but not the house again. Oh, no.
Because I said, because you told me this story, and I'm like, wow, I can never really get the time off in the summertime to go to Gettysburg, but I want to know where this house is so I can go stay there. And you said, no, I'm not telling you. I'm like, what? Oh. And you're like, no, I'm not telling you because I want to stay there. I can't have you taking the house because I want to stay there again. I'm like, all right.
Yeah. Well, it was a blast. But that was just another one of those fun times where you're like, that it's an unbelievable story, right? You're like, yeah, well, how did you get to the story? Well, we got there because of vintage baseball. Dragged us out to this place to play baseball, and here's this experience where we have haunted by the house sitter.
So how many years have you have the old Golds been at Gettysburg? Quite a few, probably.
We went out, I'm trying to think. So when we started going to Gettysburg, the event itself was a tournament. I think our very first year, and maybe the last year that they even did this, it was a tournament. Oh. So we won that first year. And then the next year, I think it became a festival, more of a, like a, just everyone go out and have a good time. But they would give you like a gold ball if you won, right? So, or you were undefeated. So we did that. So we went out there, 1, 2, 3, 4. I think we've been out there 5 years in a row. We went out, and it was just, it was so much fun. You hear about these East Coast teams and how good they are, and it's not a lie. Like, they're so talented, and the way they play baseball out East compared to how we kind of play in the Midwest is so much different, but it's so much fun. You know, the zero restrictions, I mean, they play to a T of what the rule books and how they interpret it, and it's so accurate, and it's a blast. You know, the sliding, stealing, you really feel like you're playing hard baseball out in Gettysburg. It's a blast.
You know, I talked to Chuck Chicarello of the Connecticut Bulldogs, okay, and he hates how we refer to them as the East Coast teams. And he's like, we're not any different than the Midwest, which isn't true. and you were just saying that. He's always like, why? What do people think the differences are and everything? And the differences is they take it saying they take it more seriously isn't the right way to put it. They take the recreation more seriously. They follow everything to the T and believe that's the way it should be. And we don't do that. We don't have any teams around here that do that except the regular baseball club of Mount Clemens.
Mount Clemens does it. And if you play Mount Clemens their way, I feel like it is just so much more fun. It really gets everybody more involved. When we went our first year in Gettysburg, it was probably either our third or fourth year even in existence. And, you know, we've been used to playing Midwest with a lot of restrictions, but we didn't know any better. You know, our second year, we invited some teams in New York when we went to Cooperstown to play vintage baseball with us. In New York, we invited the Atlantics that beat the crap out of us and made us feel bad about ourselves. We played the Mutuals, and we played the Gothams, and there was another team that I can't think of off the top of my head. But we didn't do so well. And they were like, you guys are playing wrong. You're doing this. And you're like, well, we don't know any better. This is how we play where we come from. And when you look back at it, you're like, man, I like the way that they play. So when we got to Gettysburg, they go, you guys aren't going to do very well. You have to steal. You have to slide. You have to, like, you need to play better. And you're like, oh, we can play baseball. We thought we were playing the way that we always play. Okay, we'll go play baseball then. And then it just, our team just like jumped up. Like, this is awesome. You can run and steal and slide. And it was a lot of fun. And when knowing those, how these teams do it like that, it makes you like, man, I just want to play Mount Clemens every game then.
Yeah. And one of the cool things about the ball never being dead, and you can't hide somebody at catcher playing that way. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, I can get hid at catcher in Michigan, but I can't go anywhere else and get hid like that. There, I have no protection back there. So somebody's got to. So I have to go somewhere else in those situations.
Well, it's like you have a team game, but sometimes when you have those restrictions where you don't have any worries about the guy stealing second or third base, then you can't, like you said, you can kind of hide some players that don't have a lot of experience, but like, oh, just go back there and catch. But it's not, it takes away some of that team aspect. So to be a more realistic rendition of baseball, you need your whole team to be there. And if you restrict these little rules that you're taking the catcher out of play and you're taking the other, you know, other players out of play. So I love the non-restriction thing. It's fun. I know we don't play it that way all the time, but at your festival, we played Mount Clemens one game like that, and it was so much fun.
It's funny, is that's a general consensus, but no one's willing to change the rules to it.
I know.
I mean, I'm in the same boat, you know.
I kind of understand it, you know, that, and there are a lot of older people, and it is just a game and stuff, but it is a lot of fun to play non-restriction. I mean, when I started playing, I got stuck at catcher, and I think that it did have a bad ring, you know, like, oh, you're catching. The only reason I started catching is because I had foot surgery, like maybe 4 months before the season started. So I had to wear a big wrap on my foot, and I had a big cleat, and I actually had to use a hockey lace to tie my shoes together. In fact, that's why my one shoe always has that shoelace on it, because it's just I remember my very first season, I had the shoelace, so I don't need it anymore, but now I just kind of have it. But, you know, the notion is that the catcher's always the worst guy on the field, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's me. I'm the worst guy out here. But I wasn't going to take anyone's spot once I healed up. I mean, we had good shortstops. We had good, you know, everyone in the infield was great. So I was like, I'll play catcher. And catcher's a blast. It's so much fun back there.
Well, you love being involved in every pitch of the game.
Everything. And, like, the foul tips, making those cool plays on foul tips is so much fun. Like, those are outs that can swing a game. You know, with bases loaded and the guy foul tips out. Like, it's just, those are game-changing, you know, plays. And it's fun to go back there and make them and have the crowd go crazy, or the oohs and the ahs when you make a cool sliding catch. It's fun.
And I think your signature is to make one of those sliding, because you will go to the ends of the earth to try to get one of those. I mean, you're jumping into tables with food or whatever is around. You will go for it. And then when you do make one of those plays, you just kind of, whatever, throw the ball out there and just walk back to the bench. But you're like, inside, you're like, yeah, I did that.
Inside, I'm so giddy and excited. But it's fun to know, like, oh, that could have just changed the game. Like, you know, you said that you had that one ball that was just barely foul. You could have tied the game. It was just barely foul, and then you foul tipped out. You know what I mean? Like, that's just a big momentum swing. But they could go the other way, too. Like, I've had a ball drop where it was hit right. I mean, it would have hit me in the face if I didn't catch it, right? And I dropped it. And you're like, how do I miss that ball? And then the guy comes up and sure enough hits a double or puts it over the fence or something like that. And you're like, I could have made that out, you dummy. You know, so I do, like, look at those moments. Like, don't waste those outs. If they come to you, you got to catch them. If they come back here and they're easily to be, you know, you can catch them, go get that ball, you know. So that's why. And the guys in the outfield, you're sitting out in 100-degree weather in the middle of center field sweating your ball out, and I miss a little pop-up that's 20 feet behind me, I feel embarrassed, you know what I mean? So you got to go out there, play hard back there.
And you also have the extra pressure, don't you, when the other club's big hitters are up there and you actually get one of the big hitters to foul tip?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you feel like you just gave them runs if you didn't come up with that.
Right. You know, my favorite, and it doesn't happen often, but I know in the World Tournament, Ian, his foul tipped out to me. And it, like you said, I kind of catch it. I don't like to celebrate it that much. But inside my head was just screaming with joy. I was like, oh, my God. Thank God that he did that. Because, you know, everyone knows he can hammer the ball. Like, he's a guaranteed double, triple, whatever. He just mashes the ball. So getting those big guys, and that's like – just a sigh of relief.
It's almost like an out and a half.
Oh, yeah.
On the scale.
It's so much fun.
Hey, tell me who some of your favorite vintage baseball players are to watch.
You know, I played with him for quite a while, too. But so when we first started playing, we just struck up a good relationship with Mike Ozzie. He doesn't play anymore. fun to watch because you look at him and you're like, "Hey, is he a good baseball player? I don't know." And then he just smashes. Like he just screams vintage baseball. It's crazy. So I always liked Ozzie. He was cool. There's a lot of guys for lots of different reasons. You know, the LaRues. I mean, you've had, you know, to play with Tanner and Tom. Tanner is like one of the nicest people on the planet. It's fun to watch him play. Just the way he, I mean, even he'll shake your hand after you catch a foul tip, and you're like, "I just got you out. You should be angry." And you're like, "Oh, okay." He's like, "Oh, great, thanks, catch, good job." And he goes out of the bench and goes out, and he's amazing. You know, on my own team, Ducky is like one of my favorite people on the planet. I mean, Ducky is an old man, and he still is like, he's just fun to watch. You know, when he gets hit now, it might take him a minute and a half to get down the baseline, but you know, he is a blast to watch, and he just absolutely loves vintage baseball, which makes me like him even more. You know,
and again,
he's one of the nicest, coolest person. You know, he's so nice.
But he doesn't take a backseat to anybody. Like you, when you watch Ducky play, you do say something to yourself like, "I bet you he was really good when he was in his youth, in his young days."
Yeah.
I mean, he's really good now.
Yeah.
He knows how to play the game. I mean, it's.
Yep. And he, you know, we as he gets older and older, we tease him more and more. But I mean, there was a little time where he had the damnest time trying to catch a ball when he was pitching. You know, and we would scream, "Anybody but Duck!" You know, and the ball could be hit right to him. And I would come charging full speed at him. Our third baseman would come running in. Mike would come running in. And everyone would scream, "Anybody but Duck!" And Ducky didn't get mad at all because he knew, like, okay, I might drop this ball, or I'm probably going to drop this ball. But it was just, he didn't get upset by it. He just loved it. Like, we try to protect him a little bit. And there's times he's like, "Hey, you know, guys, I don't know. I'm getting a little old. This is a big game. I think I want to sit out." And we're like, "Duck, you're on the team. Let's go. We need you pitching. We need you hitting." And sometimes you can think of him as almost an automatic out, but he gets that base hit over the right field, you know, over the second baseman, and the whole place erupts because it's just amazing.
Yeah, when I was on Bay City, we never thought of Ducky as an automatic out. We would move in a little bit because the power isn't there. But but we never thought he was an automatic out. He knows what he's doing.
Oh yeah, this past year, I mean, he came up with so many just fun hits. I mean, I think there was a game, I'm almost positive he was like 4-for-4 or 4-for-5 or something like that. He was amazing, and we thought he was gonna have a heart attack. But I mean, he had to run. I think there was a game he actually ran from first to third, and I mean, our whole bench was going nuts for him.
Tell me about a favorite on-field memory of yours, and you don't have to give me number one. You don't go fishing way back in the memory bank, but just at least one of the top on-field memories you have.
One of the top on-field memories. Man, there is quite a few. Almost any of the world. So probably the most like touching, the one that I remember because the first time we were there. So our very first year as a full club in existence, we were playing in the world tournament, and we went down and we didn't really know anything, right? We didn't know how big this thing was going to be. We just, hey, it's a cool tournament. It sounds like it's a world tournament. It's amazing. So we get down there and we win the first game and we win the second game. And then we play the third game. I think we played Columbus in the third game, and that was an awesome match. I think it was Columbus. But anyway, so we get to the finals against the La-Di-Das. And here we are, second year, or first, like, full year in existence, don't know anything. We get to the bench, and we look out at the crowd, and they announce the La-Di-Das versus the Saginaw Oakles. And there must have been 2,000, 2,500 people, and they booed us. And you're like, wait, what? What did we get ourselves into? Like, we had no idea. Any of our home games leading up to this moment were 15 people, you know, a couple people here, boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever, or, you know, just watching, moms and dads watching. And then to get to Greenfield Village and see all of these people, and then we got booed. You're like, this is pretty cool. You know, they wanted us to lose so bad. So, and we did. It wasn't a bad game, but we lost. But that's a cool memory. That was like one of those moments where you're like, I love this sport. This sport is so much fun. Like, softball is one thing. Even playing high school baseball, whatever, was never that good. But playing in something like this and having the opportunity to win a big trophy in front of all these people and like that stuff was really neat. And I didn't expect it. So I think that was the strangest thing. Our whole team was like, we just want to play hard. Get out there, play hard. Let's try to win. And then to get booed by all of those people and so many people watching the game like intently and like cheering for good plays and bad plays. And, you know, the umpires announcing their names. And I think we had Dave Rosemont, I think, was the guy that was doing the color commentary for it. And listening to him kind of talk trash a little bit about the nicknames and the monikers and stuff like that. It was a really cool experience. And you're like, I am so glad I decided to play vintage baseball that one random day and just fall in love with it.
Yeah, Dave Rosemont. Making fun of team or players' nicknames—that would be a good.
Oh
time.
Yeah, yeah. At the time, I think we had like so Dennis was with us at that time, and he was the Vanilla Gorilla, and it was just cracking Dave up, the Vanilla Gorilla, you know, him on the microphone echoing that throughout the thing. And, you know, the whole place is just funny.
Hey, you got your nickname from the movie Sandlot, is that right?
Yeah.
And yeah. You wear those black rim glasses, but there was a time that you were wearing clear rimmed glasses. I'm going to ask you to not do that again. Go back. You're back to the black, aren't you?
I'm back to the black. In fact, I had to buy some new ones because these are getting a little bit banged up too. And I think I still have the original like black ones. They're taped up in like my emergency sack because not surprising, I'm sure I've broken glasses playing baseball quite a bit.
Well, sure.
And the reason I started with those black ones is because at the time I didn't have insurance. So I bought these cheapy black glasses and I was like, if I break them, I don't care. They're only a couple bucks, you know? And then I started, you know, it was superstition a little bit, like, oh, it's playing well, I'm doing this. So I kept them. And yeah, I did go with the clear ones for a little while. And everyone tells me that they were stupid looking, but nobody told me for like a year. Like, you guys, I've been wearing these things for a year and nobody said anything.
No, they're not stupid looking. But it takes away from your name.
Yeah, so I'm back to the black right now. I think I've got some new ones on order that are coming because these are getting a little banged up. So I'll get back to them.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to do the whole squint thing. I mean, Dilson and I have got Sandlot Sports and so the Sandlot, obviously, we love baseball, and the Squints thing just worked out perfect. So,
yeah, we're going to get into Sandlot Sports here in a little bit. I'm going to let you plug away. But before we're going to get to know you on a more personal level. But before we do that, I want to go through all these these comments I'm getting on you on the page. All right, so. Jeff Rawl is wondering what your thoughts are on the 1867 balk rule and their application in the game. And I don't know if you remember, but he's asking that because he balked at the end of the captain's match at the Michigan Baseball Festival last year.
Well, since I'm such a good historian here, I would think that the rule itself probably shouldn't have happened because we had some restrictions on leads. So it should have been a dead ball. But that's just me. I'm not the smartest guy in the room.
Well,
that's my thought on it.
That
the season.
That is the overwhelming thought of it. But he, you know, he gets ribbed about it all the time. Yeah.
He should. He definitely should. And I listened to him the other day tell this story, and I can't remember for the life of me what team I was on. I don't know if I was on, I don't know if I was catching Jeff at the time or if I was on J-Mac. I just remember the hoopla of it that Jeff just let us all down. We had such a good match going and then he had to go blow it for everybody.
You know, I probably would not have let it end that way if we weren't fighting the darkness and going through the chaos of trying to get a winner in that game. It was like,
I know. I mean, you guys, everyone tried like, hey, get a guy over here on third with one out or no out or something, like, just somebody please score. That was a fun match. It was fun.
He also wants to know who your favorite Bay City independent named after a primate is. Jeff Rawl is very bored today. That's Grizz, right?
It is Grizz. That's a fun name, right? Grizz is one of my favorites. No, yeah, Jeff Silverback's great. He's fun to watch too. I mean, he does have some breathing issues, but and I get to see, you know, listen to a lot of it. I know some of the guys don't hear it all the time, but I'm up close and personal with him while he's batting. And
no,
he does have some breathing issues I'm concerned about.
Then Matt Vallant comes in and says, ask him if the belt holds up the pants or if the pants actually hold up the belt. It's deep, it's meaningful, but it must be known.
This has got to be a reference to something I'm not recalling.
I don't know. It sounds random.
It probably is random, but I don't know. What on earth could he be mean? I don't know. You know, when we, early on, me and Vallant and Ozzy spent a lot of time together. And with Dose and all of our travels, they would come to Ohio with us. And they'd come up to Pittsburgh with us. And things got weird a lot of times. And I'm assuming this is another weird from Matt. Weird in a good way, but, man, it was fun.
Here's a question. Here's a question from Chuck Diesel. Ask him if the fence behind home at Worlds means anything to him.
Yeah, it's poorly placed every single year. It seems to be in my way every single year.
And Matt Vallant wants to know if you have any plans to compensate them for the damage you did to said fence.
Okay, so this is what happens when you get put in a tournament scenario with time limits and everything weird. I was catching, and the ball got behind me, or I don't know how it happened, but it got stuck, like, in the fencing with somebody whose legs were on it. People were running the bases, like, and I just ripped the fence down. And like, I mean, I probably looked like an animal, but we had to stop. Something was going on. People are running the bases. You got to get involved and get the ball. So, you know, they shouldn't have put the fence there.
Matt Vallant also wants to know, with your obvious advancing age, do you feel more comfortable being part of the old golds?
It does ring a lot more true now than it did when I was 27 or 28 years old, yeah. You know, when we were playing, we were so young, and you were just having, like, I'll play forever. And, we used to, let's just make all of our games doubleheaders. We're going to do doubleheaders every time. We would play 30 to 35 games the first 5 or 6 years. And now, I think our schedule is about 15 to 17 games.
And that's pushing it.
And that's pushing it. And that is, and we joke, like, where are these young Thundercats to come push us out of here so that Squints can sit on the bench a little bit longer every once in a while, or Ducky doesn't have to play. And they're not there yet. So, yeah, the old goals are legitimately getting old.
So let's talk about the business. You started with fellow old gold Ryan Dost. You guys have a printing. Well, why don't you tell us what it is?
Yeah, it's a screen printing and embroidery company. We started it in Bay City. Thanks for the free plug, by the way. But I hope it's free. We started in Bay City and. I was done teaching, and he was out in Chicago, and I convinced him back to come start this little business. And we started from a small little loan and started building it up. And here we are now. Well, it's been 12 years. So basically, we started the same year we started Vintage. And so we've gone from a 400-square-foot place to 3 locations and 22 employees and kind of doing team sports and promotional goods all over, well, our region specifically, but kind of a little bit all over the place. So it's been a real cool business, and it's been, you know, we've been real fortunate.
Well, you do a lot with the regional, like, high schools and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Big time.
Yep.
But you also have a lot to do with vintage baseball clubs around the state. Now, I know that the Bay City Independents do their business through you. I know that I've done... Mm-hmm. everything for the Frankenmuth and for the festival through you guys. Who else have you done stuff for in the vintage community?
We've done, so like Walker Tavern, we've done some things for Mike at Canton, Droverton last year, you did some things. When a couple guys went out to, a couple teams went out to the Field of Dreams, we did some shirts for, I think it was actually Jim from Walker. I think they put it together, and we did a special shirt for them out there. And you know, when we, early on, when we were traveling to, like, when we did our John Clarkson Classics and stuff, we would make a round of shirts and sell them to the fans that were out there. Or, you know, we used to pretend there's going to be fans, but really it was just other teams buying shirts and stuff. So, we try to do anybody. I mean, I know it's vintage and people want to stay real historic to it all, but there's a ton of pride in it. So it is kind of neat to have, like, your Saginaw logo t-shirt or your Bay City Independent t-shirt or, you know, your can. Like, it is kind of fun. It's something that we do all the time. So just to have these little keepsakes, and even though they're only a t-shirt, you know, it does kind of identify who you are. When you're walking through Greenfield Village and you're not wearing your uniform, you still want to let people know, like, hey, I do play vintage baseball. You know, when I talk about the game, I love it. So I'm wearing this Saginaw Old Gold shirt. Come talk to me about the Saginaw Old Gold. I'd love to tell you more about us. Or, you know, you see the Columbus guys wearing a Columbus shirt. Like, hey, stop that guy and talk to him. Like, he's got tons of stuff to say. Most people will be so passionate about their club and identify with a t-shirt that says, hey, I love this sport. Come talk to me.
You guys do a lot more than just t-shirts, too. I think I was getting... last year for the festival, I think we offered a hoodie and like a three. Wasn't there like a? You guys do all kinds of stuff, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh yeah, we do. I mean, we do quite a bit. I mean, anything in the sporting world, you know, we'll do it, like facility stuff too. You know, like facility equipment and things like that. And our bread and butter is you know, printed apparel, embroidered apparel, hats, you know, stuff like that. We do online stores for different teams, and that's like the easiest way for us to reach out to people. I mean, Droverton did their team store, and we created a team store, put a couple of products on there, and then when they show up at the festival in Frankenmuth, boom, they're all wearing their stuff. Like, it's cool to see someone show up if they're not in uniform wearing like a t-shirt uniform of, here's this is a team we play for. It's really neat. You know, Pops put that together, and we're happy that he reached out to us.
So go ahead and give everybody the website they can go to create stuff and get stuff done. And
thanks, Matt. It's www.sandlotsports301.com. And you know, Sandlot Sports, obviously me and Ryan love baseball. We coached Little League baseball for a couple of years. And then 301 is actually the address of our very first building. It was on 301 Midland Street in Bay City. So we put it together, sandlotsports301.com, and that's our website. And, you know, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram and all the other social media platforms. And usually if you reach out there, you're talking to me. Sometimes you're talking to another employee, but most of the time it's me. So if you want to do something real bad, just tell it to me.
Easy process. Everything I've ever gotten from you guys has been top of the line. Oh, this has been a free.
Appreciate it, Matt. Thanks.
This has been a free plug. However, if a foul tip ever happens in the future, from my bat to your hands, maybe while it's in the air, you'll think about, I should probably drop this one.
I'll be sure to drop. I'll be sure to drop a couple of them for you.
I know you better than that. You're not dropping a damn thing.
You know what? I may catch it, and I'll tell you. I'm sorry. I'd like
that. I think you've already done that to me.
Well, sometimes you just feel so bad because you know somebody wants that hit so damn bad. You know, and they're up there, and like you said, you got the guy on second, third. You just need that one hit, and the foul tip back.
Well,
I feel a little bad.
You didn't feel bad that day. So
it depends on the game. You know, in these tournament games, you can't go messing around with these 3 outs. You got to get them all.
Hey, you're a big Tiger fan. You've been to a lot of Tiger games. Do you have?
Yep.
Have you been to some of the major ones?
I have. So Dose and I actually, we went to, let's see, 14 opening days in a row. I think, I think it was 13 in a row. And then he had to go and get married and extend his honeymoon 1 year. And he didn't go, he couldn't come to opening day.
Opening day wasn't part of the honeymoon? What the?
No.
Jesus.
We had a good record going. We started it back up again. And then obviously this year has been a wash. But we had planned on going this year too. I got to go to some you know, went to the World Series. I went to one of the World Series games. I can't remember exactly which one. I was there for one of Verlander's no-hitters. I'd happened to just have season tickets that year, like a 15-game package. And so I was there for that game. And I remember being – I was dating a girl at the time. It was not my wife. And we were at the game, and like the sixth inning, I'm like, we can't go anywhere anymore. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, just be quiet and watch the game. We can't do anything right now. So, and that was really cool. I mean, she had a blast. Like, she knew what was going on after that, like, you know, the whisperings, and I kind of told what was going on. But it was – that was such a fun game. And it was just – for us, it was just a random game. Like, hey, you want to go to the game? They're like, yeah, let's go. And we went, and it just happened to be, you know, that no-hitter. So I was there for that. That was cool. Just being at all the opening days, it's baseball's so fun. The first time we went, I think, was the – I think the year it started – we started going was when they signed Pudge. So, I mean, it was we could walk up and buy an opening day ticket from the box office. You know what I mean? It was that bare out there. But now watching it kind of blow up to a huge Detroit opening day, it's been really cool. It gets more and more expensive, but it's fun. They're so bad right now, but it's still baseball. You know what I mean? And last year, opening day was the only game I went to because they were just so damn bad.
Yeah, the coronavirus saved us from what was going to be another horrific, horrific season.
Yep.
We'll never know how bad they were going to be this year.
Right. maybe those top prospects I keep talking about are going to hit in the basement for a while and get some swings in. There's one thing I hate is top prospect talk.
It was the people I talked to and interview on the East Coast that are Boston Red Sox fans. The conversation always goes around to Dave Dombrowski, and how he just did to them what he did to us, but they knew it ahead of time. We didn't know this.
Yeah. Right. I'm 50-50 on that. Like, I don't care about prospects at all. I only care about the big team. I don't care about the freshman and JV teams. I only want the varsity. So I really don't care. But I do understand, like, you are pillaging the teams, the players that we need to trade and get things. But those years that we were good was so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, the 10 years that the Tigers were really good, I don't care if we're crappy for another 3 or 4 years. I mean, we were crappy almost my whole life, I feel like. I don't remember the 84 Tigers or the 80 or 86 Tigers. I don't remember those teams. I remember the Bobby Higginson teams and we were always terrible.
That was the name. That was the name that you put on those teams. It's like, how do you describe the Tiger teams in that era? They're the Bobby Higginson Tigers. That was the perfect name to pull. Oh my God.
You know, they were so bad at that time. And I mean, I still liked them, but I didn't care as much. When they started playing and when Pudge got there and you're like, holy crap, now people want to play and be here. And then it was really neat because Detroit does pull together pretty good for some sweet teams. When the teams are good, I mean, Detroit's good. When they're bad, they're terrible.
I saw a video while you're staying at home trying to keep yourself occupied. I watched a video of your son jumping over Hot Wheels cars and adding a car to it every jump until I think he made the jump, but then derfed out, and that's where I'm at in the video. So that shows you what your home life is like right now, and it shows you where mine is because I paused it, and I have to get back to that. I got to see how it ends. Go ahead.
So Dexter watches. There's this YouTube kid called like Caden BMX, and Dexter every Thursday puts out a new video, and this kid's like 8 years old. So Dexter thinks he's the coolest person on the planet. And he's a BMX kid. He does all these awesome, fun videos. Well, he put out a video saying, like, send me a video of you jumping your Hot Wheels. It's going to be the Hot Wheel Challenge. Dexter's like, I want to do that. So we always get him into the jumps and ramps and all kinds of fun stuff. And so that's what he did because that was the video Caden did. Caden put one car down at a time and jumped it and saw how he could do it. And, yeah, you see Dexter wipes out there and hurts his knees. And he wanted to cry so bad, but there was a video. So if Dad wasn't watching, he would have been crying hysterically. But because Dad had a video camera on him, he was like, are you okay? But, yeah, we do a lot of ramps around the house.
So while you're stuck at home, have you been watching a lot of streaming devices like Hulu and Netflix and stuff like that?
Yeah, a lot of it.
So let's touch on something that you've watched recently that you would recommend recommend to people.
Oh, that I would. Okay. Oh my gosh, so much. I mean, if you haven't seen Tiger King by now, I recommend that highly. You should do it before we get off the phone. Like, you should start it now. That show is absolutely amazing. Know that there's people in this world that are living that life makes me feel like I'm not doing anything with my life at all.
I haven't been able to do anything except get more subject matter on the Tiger King since I saw it. Like, I've watched extra. There's a podcast out there of a guy that stayed there for a year doing interviews and stuff that had nothing to do with that project, but he just put a podcast out. It's like 7 episodes. So I've been listening to that. I think Joe Exotic just did this question and answer from jail that was on Twitter, for the Netflix Twitter account today. His hair is epic, by the way. But
it blows my mind that there's people like that, and they should be celebrated, I think. And I'm glad they are, because I would be ashamed to know that I lived a whole life not knowing that Joe Exotic was a real person. I would feel terrible. But so that was, and my wife and I watched that in like a day. Like, we just couldn't get away from the TV. We were like, kids, shut up. Come outside. Do something. We got to watch The Tiger King.
Yeah, I got lucky on that as I watched it right when it first came out. So I didn't know what was about to happen with this. And I'm watching this and I'm like, I can't stop watching this. I didn't have any idea it was going to be this big. It was like, don't F with cats.
Yeah. And I didn't, you know, I'm watching the episodes. Like, okay, there's only 6 episodes. And, you know, we're watching, like, episode 1. Oh, no, we only have 5 left. We only have 3 left. We only have 2 left. Like, what's going to happen? I'm hoping that there's a season 2 or there's another even crazier Joey Exotic out there in some other realm that Netflix can, you know, dig up.
Oh, there absolutely is.
There's got to be another person out there that's even better than him. So, well, you watch that. I mean, I've got little kids, so we watch a lot of Disney Plus around here, a lot of Peppa Pig. So some of my streaming has been a little sketchy.
So did you get the bundle? The Disney bundle. This is a joke I have going with Mike Feeney, is whenever somebody mentions Disney Plus, I always say, you got to get the bundle because you get the,
you know what? I did get the bundle. Now I want to refuse the bundle because ESPN is just I don't even know what ESPN is anymore.
They're desperate I feel like Vintage Baseball has an opportunity here that if we get back,
you know, they really,
all other sports, we're like,
really hope we can.
Yeah, that's a.
It doesn't, you know, if we could get Vintage Baseball with some high video quality, I think it would be amazing to watch. I mean, I watched the World Tournament that one year that we weren't in it. We had a bunch of golds at the house and we streamed it and watched it, and it did it a disservice almost, because you're like, oh, this is a bunch of old guys being boring. Like, no, this is like passionate and fun. Like, they're out on the field having a blast, but on the TV, it's just so. You know, if they don't have that camera angle, can't catch it. So if they got some high value video for Vintage Baseball, I think that people would love it.
They'll have cameras available. I mean, they should. They got nothing
else. They got
else
union
to
workers
do.
Available.
Oh,
they got
commentators.
They got everybody ready. You know, I think you should bring them out to Frankenmuth and just say, hey, guys, come get a game. Come watch this.
We did that Uncle Sam last year, so that was on ESPN3, and then we had three matches on there, and I'm like, I'm in the same boat with you. I'm like, we could put on such a better show than this. Like,
I know, and it's cool. I mean, us nerds will watch it because it's Vintage Baseball, and you know the guy's playing, so that's a lot more fun too. You want to see someone drop a ball so you can rip them in a text message later. So when they get to their car, you can tell them, hey, I was watching you boot that ball. You know, what were you doing out there? So that part of it's kind of fun.
Well, Dennis Wegman Pops, he never hears the end about how he threw his bat at the end of, at the end of his match when he made the last out. And as soon as he threw it, he was like, oh my God, he didn't mean to do that, because Dennis is the nicest guy in the world. And yep. He just
it's
had that
on camera. His kids saw it. His students saw it. Everybody.
All right.
Actually, it was on TV. I'm sure not many people saw it, but we all saw it.
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the surprising numbers of that is Go Live Sports and ESPN3. Whenever they play a baseball event of any kind, they average about 2,000 live viewers. Now that doesn't count, obviously, people coming to watch it later.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
We had 10,000 viewers watching that live.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's amazing. I wasn't expecting that number.
Yeah. Does that give them the gusto to want to come back again for this year?
Well, they are coming back because we have a contract, but they heard back from a couple of professional teams, interns that are interning for broadcasting that want to come and do it because they saw it. And I think it was a guy from the Cubs and a guy from the Yankees.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I hope it happens this year. It's tough right now to say. I think I'm making the decision like on May 1st.
Okay.
See where it's going at that point.
Well, tell me what I got to do to get the golds on one of those main stages so we can get on TV, because we're not getting any younger. We're just going to get worse and worse as we get older. So this is our time to capture it the way that it is, because it's not getting any better.
This is what you want. This is what you want your kids to remember you by, because right. The way it's going to end isn't going to be this pretty.
Yeah. No, I think I wanted the kids to remember them 5 years ago. We've been a slow trickle ever since, but. We still got some good games left in us, I think.
Oh, you know, like you do. You guys know how to play baseball. You know, you're smart. Smart baseball takes you a long way.
It does. We play good teams still, too, so that's even more fun. Like, playing Bay City all the time, like, it's just those games, even if we're a fraction of how good we used to be, both of our teams are so good, like, we rise up and we play each other, and it just makes the game more fun. At least they're fun for us. I don't know if the fans watching it care, but we have a blast playing those games. And when you play those good teams like Walker and stuff like that we see all the time, man, you just play fun. They're just good games.
All right. Well, we've come to the end, but before we go, I do a little segment called Giving You the Old Pepper.
All right.
And what it is I just... That's my favorite Bugs Bunny episode ever, is when he has to play baseball against a whole team by himself.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask you 20 questions. These are random questions. Just give a quick answer.
Okay.
And if you want to talk about any of these questions in more length at the end, we'll circle back around. But first thing that's going to come to your mind on these.
All right.
Here we go. What is your favorite tree?
Oak.
What is the most overrated condiment?
Ketchup.
Wilma Flintstone or Jane Jetson?
Jane Jetson.
Did you name your son after a fictional serial killer?
No.
What was your first car?
Pontiac Sunbird.
What is your favorite 80s hair band?
Son of a bitch. Gosh. Who's Sebastian played? Why can't I think of the band right now? Who's Sebastian Bach?
No, that wasn't. Was that Warren?
God. Yeah, no. Warren could be up there, though, too. So can Winger. Those things are just great, but no. I don't know. The lead singer, Sebastian Bach, I forget what band it was.
I can't believe that I don't know that right now. That's.
Yeah.
Disappointing. did Lee Harvey Oswald kill JFK?
No.
What is your Mount Rushmore of ice cream flavors?
Mint chocolate chip, cookies and cream, chocolate, and vanilla.
What is the best material for a proper t-shirt?
Tri-blend, cotton, poly, and Bring on.
Who's your most hated Major League Baseball player?
Bryce Harper.
Oh, no. I'm going to get letters. this one from Jeff Rawl. Who's your favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle?
Donatello.
What is the most overrated soup?
Soup? Chicken noodle.
What is your most hated household chore?
Vacuuming.
What's your favorite game show?
Price is Right.
Lake or river?
River.
Which Marvel character is married to Jennifer Grey from Dirty Dancing?
The cat that got shot in the first event. He got stabbed. Clawson?
Yes, Agent Coulson.
Coulson, yep.
If you were on death row, what would your last meal be?
Hot dog.
Oh, come on. We'll get back to that. We'll go back to that. Corn or flour tortilla?
Flour.
Your favorite Winnie the Pooh character?
I'd probably say Winnie the Pooh.
And the most overrated pizza topping?
Old pepperoni.
Oh. Dude, did you say hot dog for your last meal?
Totally. I could eat hot dogs all day.
Well, okay. Put together the perfect hot dog.
It kind of depends on your scenario. If we've had plenty of parties at the house where we have a hot dog bar where we can put all the, you know, anything, chili, cheese, pickles, tomatoes, salsa, all kinds of stuff. Those for a party like that, that's one thing. At a ballpark, I can legitimately open up that soggy hot dog and put nothing on it and eat it. And then I could put mustard on it. I could eat hot dogs all day. All day. I could live on hot dogs.
So you don't want to know what they're made out of?
No, I mean, I have an idea of what they're made of. I don't want to peek behind the curtain. I don't want to know for sure what they're made of.
There'll be a doctor.
I have an idea of what they are made of.
One
but
day.
They are delicious.
The Netflix documentary will come out someday. Hot dogs.
I'm sure. Oh, it would just ruin it.
Pig lips.
Ruin it for everybody.
Pig lips and buttholes. That's what the documentary will be.
I know. So that's what I assume what they're made of. And so maybe I'm just a lips and asshole kind of guy, but they're so delicious. I could eat them anyway.
All right. Hey, Adam, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for coming on the show. People are going to love getting to hear from you and getting to know you a little bit better. So thanks for doing it. I hope you guys are staying safe. And
we sure are, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate the phone call and everything else, man. I could talk vintage baseball forever. So it's a lot of fun that hour went by real quick.
All right. Well, I'm going to write this down. McCully needs a second episode. Okay. Season 2, McCully. All right. And so to everybody out there, thanks for listening. You can catch us on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, blah, blah, blah. You can find us if you want to. We're also on the Facebooks. And also, I wanted to throw a short note out there for everybody that was wondering about the 2020 VBBA conference that was happening down in Dearborn. That obviously was canceled, but they are going to be doing a live stream of some of the conference sessions, and that's going to happen on April 18th from noon until 4:30, and I believe Go Live Sports is taking care of that. You can go right to their website, vbba.org, and find out all of that information. And with that, I want to thank everybody once again, and be safe out there, kids.
Gentlemen, you have my demands. Peace out.